Hi, this is Jason Cascarino. Thanks for listening to the Lessons in Adolescence podcast, a production of the Remaking Middle School Initiative, whose founding partners include Youth Next, the University of Virginia's Center to Promote Effective Youth Development, and the Association for Middle Level Education, or AMLE. You can learn about Remaking Middle School on the web at remakingmiddleschool.org. Now, here's this episode. Hello and welcome to the Lessons in Adolescence podcast, where we explore the many facets that impact young adolescents in the middle school years, from the adverse to the awkward to the awesome. I'm your host, Jason Cascarino. Today, I talk with Julie Lammers and Raul Chaudaha. Julie is Senior Vice President of Advocacy and Corporate Social Responsibility for American Student Assistance, or ASA, an organization that invests in and advocates for greater career exposure and exploration for youth as early as the middle grades. Raul is Managing Director, Higher Education at Morning Consult, a firm specializing in survey research and business intelligence. In our conversation, we dive into a soon-to-be-released survey of employers and adolescents around alternative or non-traditional or non-degree post-secondary education opportunities. These multiple pathways lie at a complicated convergence for adolescents. They are drawn to them, in part as a means to avoid the costs and likely debt involved in going to college, but they also have a prevailing mindset, heavily influenced by the current system, that traditional college is still the best pathway to a good, well-paying job.
Two out of three respondents, Gen Z high school students, said that they are concerned about the college debt. So even so early in the decision-making journey, they're already seeing that there is a negative connotation to it. And yet, they are channelized towards college education because they are not seeing the possibility of what else is a really good opportunity for them. So that's a black box problem which needs to be solved. There is an intention, but there is a lack of action.
And so one of the challenges that I think, from a policy standpoint we've got there, right, is that debt may be a challenge for people to manage, but right now, it's one of the only ways to finance higher education, right? So federal and state education financing doesn't necessarily cover a lot of the diverse pathways we're talking about. And so if I want to pay for my education and I don't have the means to do it, you know, out of pocket, then the federal policy sort of shifts towards the more traditional paths. Mm-hmm.
In part one of our conversation, Julie, Raul, and I talk about how this survey came about, how it was designed to capture both employer and youth perspectives, the partners involved in the effort, what we mean by multiple pathways in the post-secondary space, the perceptions of those pathways that the survey showed, and some of the delicate communication challenges that highlight the value of multiple pathways without setting different expectations for youth driven by certain biases. In part two, we look further into the findings of the survey, addressing the motivations for pursuing alternate pathways, such as the avoidance of debt and accelerating a path to employment, how to change the narrative to better legitimate multiple pathways such that they are not viewed by both employers and youth as riskier than traditional college, and what some of the structural changes that may be necessary are in the K-12 education system, federal policy around post-secondary education financing, and employer hiring practices in order to make multiple pathways more viable and perceived by both employers and youth as more valuable. Just a quick note, this interview was recorded on site at the ASU GSV Summit in San Diego. Now, here's part one of my interview with Julie Lammers and Raul Chaudaha. Julie, Raul, it's great to have you here. Thanks very much for joining the podcast. Thanks for spending some time to talk with me.
Thanks for having us.
So for our listeners here, we are here at the ASU GSV conference in San Diego, and it's one of the biggest, if not the biggest, gatherings of the ed tech world. And there's somewhat of a unique track at the conference dealing with career exploration, career readiness, career preparation, which connects really squarely with adolescent development. And here we're going to talk about the career pathways and an about-to-be-released, I guess, survey and study put out in partnership between American Student Assistance, Jobs for the Future, and Morning Consult.
The findings were quite revealing and I think informative and instructive for our space, and we're going to talk about that. But before we get into that, let's learn a bit about the two of you briefly. So Julie, you are Senior Vice President of Advocacy and Corporate Social Responsibility at ASA. You were poli-sci, I read. I was poli-sci.
Yes.
We're both in the world of education and youth service, so we both have stories about why that is and why that's the case. Let's hear yours. How has your poli-sci interest and training influenced your career?
Sure. Yeah, so I started my career, I've been at ASA for about 13 years now, but prior to that I worked for the Senate, U.S. Senate, for 9 years. And I actually got that job as an intern when I was in high school. Stayed on as an intern for the years that I was in college, and the year I graduate, I got a job in that office. So the ability to test and try what you like is really very, very ingrained in all things that I sort of view about career exploration and ability for kids to understand in a real sense sort of what their, how they envision their career trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a college that had a co-op model. By the time I graduated, I had had six different jobs, and I could really eliminate the things that I hated
mm-hmm.
and really hone in on the things that I liked. And so I realized that that was an area that I really enjoyed and wanted to stick with, and I was able to do that while I was in college. And so the ability for kids to have internships and work-based learning experiences is really something that is driven by my own personal experience,
mm-hmm.
something that we really push at ASA at a younger age, I would say, than waiting until college. You know, our focus at American Student Assistance is really trying to figure out if we can give kids, starting in middle school, the opportunity to explore careers, but then by the time they get to high school, making sure that every kid has the experience to test and try through work-based learning prior to making a post-secondary education choice, so that it can be a really well-informed choice.
Yeah, we've talked a lot on this podcast about the importance and the strong connection between career exploration and and adolescent development. You know, they're beginning to kind of come into their own, they're establishing their identity, they're building their sense of agency, you know, what they want to do in the world, what they want to accomplish. And so exposing young people to what their possibilities are young as possible, mm-hmm. particularly the early adolescent period, fits squarely with the developmental science. Raul, you are Managing Director of Higher Education at Morning Consult. As I read it, your experience seems steeped in data analytics and business intelligence, business strategy. What drew you to applying those very businessy skills to the world of higher education?
So unlike Julie, my career path had been also in one way by the process of elimination, but not at early career trajectory, because I went through the full four-year undergraduate engineering degree. That was a process of elimination that I did not want to do engineering, and then went for an MBA. And I was always a curious person, and I was interested in knowing why. So then one of the things which occurred to me that maybe research is my career path. And that's what I took, that why something is happening and what can be done about it. So applied research became my thing. And so over 15 years now with research and consulting and data had been my go-to place to solve problem with data and analytics. So yeah, that's how I got engaged with this relationship with the ASA through Morning Consult, that taking up this project related to career exploration for Gen Z.
Yeah, let's talk about that. So post-secondary education pathways, perceptions of employers and Gen Z students. That's the title of the presentation that you're giving here at the conference. And this was a survey that you all conducted and now presenting some of the findings. But before we get into the findings, I'm always really curious how these efforts come about,
mm-hmm.
Particularly collaborative ones with multiple organizations that can be challenging sometimes. So Julie, maybe you can give us a bit of the genesis of this project.
Sure.
And then our podcast audience may be less familiar with Morning Consult and what you bring to the project. So maybe you can say a bit about the business as well.
Yeah, great. So this is a collaboration between American Student Assistance and JFF, Jobs for the Future, a nonprofit that is looking really to transform education and workforce system. And the priority, or the majority of their work, I'd say, till this point, has really been on the employer and sort of later skill building side. ASA's focus really is on middle school to high school. So we have an interesting timeline between the two organizations. Of ASA starts a little bit younger, JFF brings in the employer perspective. But this issue of helping kids plan and understand post-secondary education pathways is something that is a shared interest of both organizations. Long-term, the goal of this partnership really is to drive narrative change around post-secondary education pathways, to really help people understand what the variety of options are, to open up possibilities for people to experience new pathways, to appreciate new pathways, to value pathways. The research that we brought in Morning Consult to help us do was to really set a baseline of where current perception is when we're thinking about education to career pathways that don't include sort of starting with a four-year degree, right? So what do employers feel about boot camps or credentials? Do they understand the difference between a license and or a certificate and a certification? And then from the student perspective, similarly, their understanding of these options, because they certainly will never take them if they don't understand what they are. So just getting a general awareness of what the diversity of post-secondary education landscape looks like, and then willingness to participate in those pathways. So from a student perspective, is it something they're likely to apply for? From an employer side, is it something they're likely to hire from? And at the moment, it's really just trying to get that baseline understanding. That's where we're starting with this work.
Morning Consult is a data intelligence and research company, about 500 people based out of DC. So our work always had been focused on solving the business problems for the clients through data and intelligence. And so when this partnership opportunity came up through ASA and JFF, we were providing the whole research expertise in terms of designing the survey, conducting it, analyzing it, and reporting it out. And so that's an opportunity for us to make an impact of applied research.
I know there are a lot of opinion surveys for and about employers. Mm-hmm. I suspect not as much concerning Generation Z. So I'm Generation X, in full disclosure, which makes my kids Gen Z, I believe.
Yes.
I know the boundaries of generations can be they're somewhat
fluid.
Flexible. But tell us a little bit about the methodology here. You know, first, as just a matter of the subject, you know, what do we mean by multiple education pathways or non-traditional pathways or non-degree pathways? Why is that an important topic of study to begin with? Mm-hmm. Julie, maybe you can speak to that. And then Raul, what are the basic mechanics of developing a survey like this, particularly one that is meant to be administered to two quite different constituents, employers and youth?
Yeah, it took a lot of discussion to really narrow in on what we were looking to hone in on. I think ultimately the thing that sort of struck us all was constant conversations about alternatives to college and the fact that we hate that phrasing, right? We want to figure out a way of expanding opportunity and not having it appear as something other, right? So how do you increase access to a diversity of pathways? What does that diversity of pathways look like? And how do you frame it in a way that doesn't seem like it's an alternative? Because alternative obviously has serious negative connotations. Because there is a sort of a changing dynamic between what students are looking for. There's changes in higher education about what they're providing. There's changes in the employer system of what they need from employers or employees. And it's not all satisfied with a four-year degree. So if we are still saying that that is what we define as success, it's problematic for all of our systems. And so it really was trying to figure out how do we reframe a conversation about post-secondary education so that we are not saying this is we're looking at an alternative to college, but really driving a conversation about opening up these possibilities. What we ended on was education pathways that included a sort of evaluation of skills that did not require a degree precisely, but was an education path. So it was not necessarily gap year we looked at. It wasn't necessarily service learning that we looked at. It was some sort of educational experience. So that's where we started with this and came up with a whole list of things that would be included in the survey. I think we ended up with 10 or 15 options to ask people about and get reactions to. So that's where we began.
Yeah, and just building on what Julie mentioned, that framing of the research was a very important part, that what we are keeping within the scope and what we are keeping out. And for that, of course, we looked at literature. We went through this consultative process with the GFF team and ASA and figuring out, like, okay, what's most meaningful for us to be investigating as a part of this research problem, for which ultimately we need action plan, right? So this research has to enable a path for making the change, which both ASA and GFF are working towards. So it was very thoughtfully co-created in terms of scoping it out so that it is applied. But I would also add that we were looking at from a framework of gap analysis. So we are looking at the stakeholder one side, which is employer. We're looking at Gen Z. And we are seeing that, okay, potentially there could be a gap. So that was one of the hypotheses we are starting with. And we are also starting with the understanding that there could be differences by awareness to likelihood to act, to the who are the influencers and what are the barriers. So all these questions were ultimately being framed to see the gap between two of these audiences. And just for the purpose of the focus of conversation on Gen Z, of course, we wanted to pay a special attention to that. These are high school students who may be at different stages of their decision-making, with different contexts in which they are making these decisions. We wanted to parse out those nuances so that there is more actionable and tangible action plans.
You talked about gap analysis, Raul. There were some really interesting areas where the sentiments diverged. Perhaps one of the most telling ones, I guess, if I was writing the headline of this report, I'd probably call this out as the most important in terms of what it means for the education space broadly. It's that there are a great number of both employers and Gen Z youth who are willing to at least contemplate pursuing non-degree pathways, but they are unaware of the opportunities available to them or, and this is really interesting, they perceive it as risky. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I think that it's universal from either both an employer standpoint and from a student perspective, right? So there is certainly a willingness, but their likelihood of doing it is significantly lower than their willingness. And it comes down to when we asked what the barriers were, they were both tied to risk. So from an employer perspective, risk of not understanding the value of a credential, the risk of hiring incorrectly was too high. From a student perspective, basically risk of picking incorrectly because they don't understand this variety of options. And so because of that risk, I will default to what I already know. And I think that is sort of the major finding there.
I agree. And that's a key one, that the perception of risk is framed from what they know also. So familiarity is a big part of that, that the known path is safer choice than going into the unknown territory. But it may be a better choice, it's just unknown at this point of time. So that's the gap which needs to be bridged at some point of time. To give you the specific data point on that, the number one reason picked up by employers among the barriers for hiring someone from a non-degree credential was related to what Julie mentioned, the risk of hiring a wrong candidate. And on the Gen Z side, the risk perception is being framed by parents. And so the number one reason they say is my family expects me to mm-hmm. go to college. Mm-hmm. So there is an influencer element also here, which needs to be considered, that who's shaping the viewpoints and perceptions of risk.
And one of the things, just to add to that we saw when we did sort of in-depth interviews, particularly with the student cohorts, is that they all sort of defaulted to, yes, this is the path, the known path that I'm going to go down. Unless there was someone in the group that was going down one of these newer pathways, one of these education to career pathways that was not 4-year at the immediate endpoint, discussions in that group changed, and kids seemed to be a lot more open to, oh, that's something I might want to pursue or might at least want to consider now that I've heard that there's somebody else doing it. Right, and so it is sort of opening up conversations about what is possible, and if they see someone in their cohort that is sort of paving the way from them and can show them that it is less risky than they might have perceived in the past, then it at least opens up their willingness a little bit more. But the fact that all of their friends are doing one thing, they tend to default to that known entity.
Yeah, it's really remarkable, and this maybe speaks to some of the structural issues, how much we're governed by inertia and the world that we currently live in, not being able to sort of understand that the world as it is not necessarily as it ought to be. And I'm really sort of curious about some of the additional kind of barriers, like pressure or the expectations that both parents and also educators put on kids. You know, for the longest time, there was a very strong sentiment within the K-12 space that we weren't having high enough expectations, that going to college was supposed to be raising the standard, raising the bar, and raising the possibilities mm-hmm. for young people. This maybe speaks to sort of the communications challenge that you probably have, that we all have with the multiple pathways, because I think that's definitely growing, the sense that people are understanding that this is these are valuable, mm-hmm. That it's not just one, you know, trajectory that we need to prepare kids for. But there's also a little bit of this delicate dance of, like, are you placing different types of expectations on kids depending on, you know, is this another form of, like, tracking kids mm-hmm. in yeah. the right way? Have you had those sort of types of conversations?
Yeah, we've certainly had those conversations. And I think, you know, our colleagues at JFF say really well that our current systems aren't particularly equitable. So, we need to really look at what are we perpetuating here, and should we start to try to do things differently? Yeah. I think there is certainly a lot of concern, rightly so, about setting up a tracking system again. That's not certainly what we want to be doing. But there is also an opportunity here for increasing equity and access to post-secondary education. And we're not saying we don't want kids to go to college. We just want to say that there's a variety of ways of obtaining that post-secondary education degree that might not be linear. Right, and that's what we need to be more accepting of. It could be a 2 to a 4 year degree. It could be getting credits while you're in high school and getting an associate's degree and then going to work and then maybe a 4 year degree. This idea that we have to go straight from high school to college, I think, is the one that we're trying to figure out. How do we sort of upend that conversation? But I think there is increasingly openness and understanding that it has to be more than just college as the endpoint, and we do see states focusing a lot more attention on college and career, mm-hmm. and that it is a linear path, and that we need to figure out how we make kids prepared for both options. You know, Delaware has done a really good job in the last couple of years of building pathway programs in all of their high schools. They recently, last year, started to move that back in the process to really start with social emotional learning and career exploration in eighth grade, so that kids can then appropriately pick a pathway, have a high school work-based learning experience, sort of build in college credit while they're in high school. There are pockets of excellence of sort of reframing and rethinking that college has to be the end goal, but it has to be aligned with career interests and what the long-term success looks like is, I think, beginning to shift away from just the end point of a degree.
That was part one of my interview with Julie Lammers and Raul Chaudaha. In part two, we will dive deeper into the survey results, looking at both the motivations for and barriers to pursuing alternative or non-traditional post-secondary pathways, the ways we need to talk about those pathways differently in order to mitigate some of these barriers, and some of the big structural changes that may be required to make them more widespread. That's in just a moment on the Lessons in Adolescence podcast, where we feature conversations with researchers, practitioners, program developers, and advocates for young adolescents in the middle school years. Recently, I talked with Nat Kendall-Taylor, CEO of Frameworks Institute. Frameworks plays a unique role in the social sector. It uses the science behind how human beings learn about and understand the world around them in order to position or frame social causes in ways that compel people to take positive action or change. For a number of years, Frameworks has been developing strategies and resources to help educators and advocates reframe adolescence in ways that better call out aspects of exploration, discovery, and openness, which balance out traditional messages of angst and risky behaviors.
So you want your messages to convey that kind of openness. And openness is a neutral concept, right? Openness isn't positive or negative. But what we have to realize is that our discourse about young people is overwhelmingly negative. Our narratives are overwhelmingly kind of danger, you know, aligned. And what we need to do is not get woo-woo and hopey-changey and unrealistic about how adolescence is this wonderful, rosy, good all the time kind of time of life, but we do need to communicate in ways that balance the kind of risk, which is real, with the opportunity, which is equally real. And so what I would love to see is people who are communicating about these issues, almost more than anything else, is to really think about that idea of balance. How do I counteract an overwhelmingly negative discourse by introducing the idea of opportunity, of learning, of the potential of this period of time.
You can catch all of my conversation with Nat in a previous episode. And now, returning for part two of my conversation with Julie Lammers and Raul Chaudaha.
And there's some practicalities that are also at play here, which I think came out in the data as well. And cost comes up a lot. The notion of debt is really high on their list of something to avoid. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very experiential.
Yep.
Young people in the survey talked about cost and the notion that alternate pathways may be more affordable. But also talk about time, too, that mm-hmm. it's potentially a faster way to get to a good paying job. I presume you had some speculation about why this may be the case.
I think a lot of it is anecdotal at the moment, but what we have seen over time is, we had in past generations parents that had gone to post-secondary education themselves. It may have been somewhat of a financial burden, but it was not overwhelming. They were able to pay for college with a summer job or, working while they were in school. We then moved into a generation of who are now parents that are probably still paying their loans themselves. Mm-hmm. So this idea of college debt and the impact that it has on sort of long-term financial impact, it's really sort of ingrained in this generation of students whose parents are still, may have negative perceptions of post-secondary education because of their experience if it either wasn't successful or they're still burdened by their debt. And I think that does have an impact on the way this generation views the necessity of taking on debt. I think they are also much more aware, given social media and the constant influx of information that they are exposed to more than previous generations, that this is an issue, right? I don't think it was something that was talked about all that much before this generation came of age, unless people sat down with their parents and talked about the cost of college, right? It is a constant issue in the media, on Twitter, all over the news, that debt is something to be concerned about. And so it's somewhat ingrained in them to be that this is an issue. So I think that is somewhat of a driving factor. I think also in the last couple of years, spurred on largely by COVID, right, the students have rethought and refocused on how they want to consume higher education, right? A lot of them have been forced to do it from home. Some people liked that, some people hated it. But they hear from their friends what new models are available. Do you want to be doing, your freshman year from your bedroom? Or could you go out and work and do something, get a certificate online while you're working? The pandemic has forced a shift, I think, in the last couple of years. And it has forced higher education to rethink how they deliver models of education. So I think that has driven some of what Gen Z is seeing.
Just to quote a specific data point on what Julia alluded to, is that there was a statement we asked that how much has COVID-19 impacted the way you think about high school? And 50% basically said that yes, COVID-19 impacted the way they think about high schools. And
schools or higher ed?
About plans after the high school. And future pathway has definitely shifted. But there is another data point we collected, and that is about what are they looking forward to. And the number one statement we asked is they want to learn about the skills that can prepare them for the jobs that will be in demand for the future. So when there is so much of narrative around the change in the economy, change in the way of working, way of life, high school students are also thinking about it, consciously or subconsciously. And that is definitely changing their expectations. So that's one part of it. And the second part, which was also discussed, was about the college debt. So 2 out of 3 respondents, Gen Z high school students, said that they are concerned about the college debt. So even so early in the mm-hmm. decision-making journey, they're already seeing that there is a negative connotation to it. And yet, they are channelized towards college education because they are not seeing the possibility of what else is a really good opportunity for them. So that's a black box problem which needs to be solved. There is an intention, but there is a lack of action.
And so one of the challenges that I think from a policy standpoint we've got there, right, is that debt may be a challenge for people to manage, but right now it's one of the only ways to finance higher education, right? So federal and state education financing doesn't necessarily cover a lot of the diverse pathways we're talking about. And so if I want to pay for my education and I don't have the means to do it, you know, out of pocket, then the federal policy sort of shifts towards the more traditional paths. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a policy issue there that is a long-term challenge that we need to fix in order to change some thoughts around this. Because there is some sort of validation when the federal government says these are the programs that is okay to spend federal money on, then it means there's something different, or I want to say lesser, about the other programs that they just have not, they don't have that stamp of approval.
Yeah. So one way to read this is perhaps that young people are being boxed in, right? They know, they want to avoid debt. That is a very strong part of their consciousness based on whether it's their family or the concept of, is this really sort of worth it? Do I want to put myself in a position where I'm starting out from behind? But they also there's this expectation and there's this inertia, there's this system, this is the path that I'm supposed to go on in order to get a good job, yeah. You know, and so forth. So in some ways that ups the pressure for all of you, because we have to do better about how we're defining these pathways so that they become more appealing, they become more standard. From ASA's perspective, are there opportunities, are there investment opportunities for ASA and others that can influence how people think about multiple pathways? How have you thought about what are the specific things that you can do to reshape the narrative?
Before I get to that, you know, one of the things I think is so vital is that because it is such a risk and because the fear of the debt is so high, one of the things that we firmly believe is that kids should have a lot more information much earlier in the process, right? So if you are waiting to until college to test and try what you might like Rahul did, that he went and got an engineering degree and then decided he didn't like it. If he had had chance to experience an engineering field prior to taking engineering classes, he might have chosen a different route. And what we have seen way too often is that kids wait until junior or senior year to get their first internship in college. They have then spent time, money, and effort on something that it turns out they didn't like. They now have to change majors, sometimes change schools, lengthen their time to degree. It increases their debt burden. So one of the things that we are adamant about is making sure that kids have more information much earlier in the process, starting in middle school, really trying to understand what their opportunities and interests are, and then in high school being able to actually test and try those things so they can eliminate the things that they don't like prior to having to make a post-secondary education decision. We see in earlier surveys that we had done of Gen Z, their decision-making process for picking higher education has typically been, I will pick a school, then I will pick a major, and then I will figure out what career I like. Mm-hmm. And that, in our minds, is completely backwards, right? Because that's one of the things. I mean, there's lots of things driving higher education cost and debt, but that poor, and I guess the fact that they are not making deliberate choices that links post-secondary education to their long-term goals is really problematic. And so trying to flip that and make sure that kids are making much more deliberate choices prior to picking post-secondary education, whatever the path may be, it could be four-year college, but have you decided why that college, why that major? What is it that you want to achieve and do with that? Has that thought been made, or is it just your opportunity to explore, which is a very valid and noble purpose of post-secondary education, but with the cost being what it is, it's also a very expensive way to do it. So can we make some of those decisions much earlier and help drive decision-making that is more aligned with long-term goals?
It's such a critical point, because we have evidence to that also. So 71% of Gen Z high school students said that I would like more career exploration opportunities in high school, 71%. So 3 out of 4 is agreeing to that statement, and clearly they are not getting what they are looking for early in the funnel. And that's why this kind of information gap starts taking them to a place where they have to make those choices, because there is very little available for them to choose from now, and they get pigeonholed in a way for their journey.
And that's where I wanted to go next, because I feel like this is where the sort of the structural issues come into play, right? I mean, I want to know what this all means for the K-12 system, particularly in the accountability era, right, that's been designed around traditional college readiness. That's where it's built on. What are some of the systemic redesign in schools that needs to happen to better align with this multiple pathways to careers approach?
Yeah, so I think there are a lot of really promising practices that are emerging and need to be much more widespread. So certainly things like PTEC models that include both higher education and, you know, associate's degree before you actually finish. It's a 6-year program that, you know, allows you to get both a high school diploma and an associate's degree, and is aligned with job interests. Early college certainly has sprung up throughout the country and is a really good way for kids to prove that they are ready to take on sort of higher academic work and really be able to sort of test and try college before leaving high school. There are a lot of good 13-year models, right, that add an extra year to the high school experience and let kids experience post-secondary education in a more sort of supportive environment, because we know that that critical piece of transition from high school to college is a point where kids often have missteps. And so can we help with that bridge? Really, opportunities, I think the biggest opportunities are to sort of blur the lines between higher education and K-12 so that it's a more seamless system and provides the necessary supports and sort of long-term education goals that the kids need.
And I think from a middle school perspective, there's another pretty critical transition that we mm-hmm. have a lot of drop-off, which is middle school into high school.
Yep.
And so you can envision if there is some career exploration in middle school that you're sort of beginning to excite young people about what the opportunities are. They can begin to sort of, again, this is all developmental, they begin to sort of see what they can become.
Yeah.
As opposed to, oh gosh, high school, the academic rigor is just so much more, and it, you know, it's a different type of mentality about what high school is, that transition. So you can envision that transition maybe could benefit
absolutely
by motivating young people and giving them a sense of agency.
Yeah, so the work that's being done in Delaware is really interesting. So they have had an extensive pathway model in the high school for a number of years, really trying to build out career pathways and career experiences, work-based learning experiences for kids in high school aligned with needed jobs in the state of Delaware. What they've recently done is backed that up into middle school to, in their words, ensure that every middle schooler in Delaware knows themselves before they leave middle school. And it really is an opportunity to figure out how do you hone into kids' personal interests, help them understand where they sort of see themselves in the world before they have to choose, you know, make decisions about high school, whether it's a high school pathway, what they're going to take in high school, all of those things that will set them on a course. They want to make sure kids really have the opportunity to explore that prior to leaving middle school. I think the other thing that we have found, which I think is sort of a well-known fact, that by the time kids leave middle school, they have started to foreclose a lot of opportunities for themselves if they don't understand them mm-hmm. or haven't seen them. And so what is the opportunity then to really hone in on the middle school age to expose them to the variety of options that might be available to them? If they have an interest in science, what are the 35 different possibilities here that you might not have seen because someone in your family is not, you know, in this field? Really trying to make sure that we are expanding opportunity before kids start to foreclose possibility.
Raul, are we missing anything out of the data that we should be highlighting?
We are seeing in our data, of course, with all these non-degree pathways. Julie started with how important it was to define these terms. And that's another thing to keep in mind as we look at the data, that each of these programs potentially has different level of awareness, likelihood to act, and preferences. What it means is that some of them will rise to the consideration set or awareness set more than the others. Mm-hmm. But the important thing is that there are diverse pathways and diverse solutions for diverse audience. That, and I'm looking at the logo of American Student Assistance right behind you, and it says a path for every student.
Yeah.
Actually, the scenario in which we are, it is almost like only one path for every student. That's the problem we are trying to solve with this research, that there are multiple pathways for multiple contexts of the students where they are coming from, and that change needs to start potentially from employer side, from parent side, because they are the big influencers mm-hmm. on Gen Z's decision making at this point.
Yeah, I think one of the things we saw, a lot of it is driven by employers. Largely, when you look at students, they are saying that one of the reasons that they are choosing 2 or 4 year college degree is because they believe that is the path that an employer is most likely to hire from. So if we can change that dynamic, you know, parents will likely be more willing to accept this as a norm if they see employers are more willing to hire their children. The parent side, it is a fear that my child will not have any employability skills or will not be viewed as a good job prospect. So it does come back to employer preference and employer behavior.
And I can add one specific data point on what Julie mentioned. Actually, it's an important one from the point of view that we are talking about students at different stages of their decision making. And so there was a particular question we asked about what are the barriers for you to pursue non-degree education pathways. And the top three were, my family expects me to do it. And the second one was, I think employers favor job applicants with college degrees. Now, the important thing within that question, when we break it down by gender and the grade level, no difference. So a 9th grader is thinking the same thing as a 12th grader. A male student and a female student is thinking the same thing. What it means, it's a universal, that, yep, employer is wanting it, and that's why this is my pathway.
Yeah. You talked about you used the term signal, like it was your businesses or employers see degrees as a signal of skill. And I think what we're trying to think here is, are there other signals that we can create for skills? What's next for this work, Raul? Are there things that we still don't yet understand, more data that we feel like we need to study? And Julie, what's next for the work for you all in terms of pushing some of these changes, creating a new narrative, maybe trying to push on some policy changes or some structural changes, and what's next for the partnership?
In terms of research, what we have created is a baseline, of course, with the sponsorship with the ASA and JFF and partnership with them. So the one key part here is that we understand now employers. We understand Gen Z high school students at the baseline level, but there are other stakeholders. There are influencers, so there is a survey we'll be doing in terms of DC insiders, which is basically a survey of policymakers, also that what is their perception on this issue. We will also, next phase to be yet to be discovered, but we clearly see that there are opportunities to discover more about the differences within employers, by industries, by the employer size. We have a baseline, but there is a lot more need to be understood when the needle needs to be moved, that why a particular industry or a particular hiring manager or a type of profile in which they are hiring for, what are their perceptions and how do they differ? So there is a lot more opportunity to go deeper in the employer side when we know from this research that employer is where the needle needs to be moved.
It's funny, that's a classic data challenge, isn't it? Like, you can always understand what's happening first, not the why it's happening.
Right. As far as what's next for this, a few things. First of all, JFF is finalizing a landscape survey to really understand what these types of credentials look like, what these pathways look like, and try to figure out, did we miss anything, right, when we were looking at the research that we didn't ask about? So that landscape survey should be done in the next couple of months to really help define what all of these options are and what they look like in real practical terms. There's that piece of it. And then there is just work that we are doing on trying to shift conversation around and open up understanding that this is something that needs to change. And that is a harder effort. It starts with things like, how do we define these things other than saying alternative paths to college, right? And just going to, what is that word choice? What is something that is going to be open and acceptable to everyone that they understand and that is much more positive than this idea of an alternative?
The question we always ask at the end, if there was one thing, one bit of advice based on your experience examining the interests of Gen Z and employers on the multiple pathways that you would offer to educators, both in school and in after school and in summer programs, the things they either ought to know or ought to be doing, what would it be?
If I can take a leeway for two things, and connect it to data, the first one being that Gen Z told us that they're looking for non-degree pathways for lower cost and faster to complete a faster option than to completing a degree. So clearly there is an interest, there is a need which needs to be served for the future of the country. And if we don't find that solution, we are missing out on our challenge as a stakeholder, be it the researcher or a policymaker or an organization. So that would be my first takeaway, that there is a clear expressed need that Gen Z is looking for alternatives, which could be, and I use this word very cautiously here, a better option than what they are always told as a only option, which is the college degree. But the second part I will also highlight from the employer side is that they clearly indicated that the future is where they want to hire more candidates from non-degree pathways. So if both stakeholders are expressing need and we are not solving for it, there is something missing here. And so this is clearly a call to action for us as a baseline from the research.
One of the things that we need to push on is how do we minimize the risk of taking these options by ensuring quality, right? High quality pathways is what we want. It's not just alternative or, you know, new options for new options' sake. They have to be high quality that lead to really strong outcomes for students. There is no really good way right now of assessing quality for a lot of these programs. And so that is a missing piece. And for students to understand the differences between credential types and what it will eventually get them. Right now, there is a perceived, I would say, but understood value of a bachelor's degree, of an associate's degree. Those have a set quality standard because they are, you know, both widely known, but also there is some quality assurance to the way that they are administered and, you know, standards that schools have to meet. We have to figure out that quality piece. I think one of the most important things is what we have seen and was very clear in the results was that there is this understanding and acceptance that this is the way forward. However, in general, this is a great idea, but not for me, right? And it goes to both parents, it goes to schools, it goes to employers. Everyone has to be willing to say, it is good for my child too, right? It can't just be for everyone else's child to be the ones testing and trying this new way of doing higher education. Everyone has to say, yes, we understand that there are many metrics of success when it comes to post-secondary education, that it does not look like one thing anymore, and that this is good for my child too.
That's right, minimizing the risk is going to be so important, right? Make sure that young people can leap into these things without having to feel like they're taking too much of a chance. Well, Julie Rowe, I really appreciated this data. We spend so much time on this podcast and in the work that we're doing around middle grades to amplify the voice of young people. And I feel like you've been doing that here through this survey, through this research, really getting the sentiments of Gen Zers out there and what it is that they want and expect for their future. So this has been really informative and insightful. And just thank you so much for doing the work. And thanks for spending time to talk with us about it.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Jason.
That was Julie Lammers of American Student Assistance and Raul Chaudaha of Morning Consult. You can follow ASA online at asa.org or on Twitter at ASA_impact. And you can follow Morning Consult online at morningconsult.com or on Facebook and Twitter at Morning Consult. Or follow Raul on Twitter at Raul Chaudaha.
Thanks for joining the Lessons in Adolescence podcast, a production of Remaking Middle School, an initiative that seeks to transform the learning and development experience for young adolescents in the middle school years. Remaking Middle School brings together good educational practice in school and out of school with the latest developmental science. You can learn about Remaking Middle School or find more resources about the topics of this podcast on the web at remakingmiddleschool.org. Or learn more about the founding partner organizations, the University of Virginia's Youth Next Center, on the web at education.virginia.edu/youth-next, or on Twitter at youth_next. And the Association for Middle Level Education, on the web at amle.org or on Twitter at amle. The Lessons in Adolescence podcast is produced by Abby Gillespie and me, Jason Cascarino. Editing by Paige Waterhouse. You can listen to or download each episode at the Remaking Middle School website, on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks for listening.